I'd like to give a shout out right now to Doubting Thomas. I know I'm leaping ahead by a week or so in the lectionary, but the reality is Doubting Thomas gets a lot of flack for speaking what every single other person in the gospel did. We think of him as doubting the resurrection and wondering if it really happened. And he's cast down for that. But the reality is, just like we see today, every single person, the first time they heard about it, didn't believe it and wanted proof. Every single person. It's natural. It's natural to want a little more evidence of something like this. But I would ask you, when we think about the resurrection and we think about all of the amazing things that God has done throughout history and in our lives, at what point did God have to start operating within the laws of logic and reason according to our narrowly defined zones of comfort? So, this is not the first time that someone in the Bible had been raised from the dead. We see multiple examples of this. We see examples way, way back when Elijah was called to the widow of Zarephath because her son had died. And he went and he brought him back to life. And what was the big question there was why he did it. Because on the one hand, it happened, and that sort of defies belief. But on the other hand, when you look at the fact that this widow lived in Sidon, which was the heart of Baal territory, the heart of Baal worship. They were enemies of the Israelites. And you see a God call his prophet to cross into enemy territory, to cross international borders, to go into the heart of another country's religion for an idolatrous God and still heal somebody and help them. That defies logic and reason more than the act of raising from the dead itself, because that is so uncommon. That is so uncommon. We see the example of Jesus helping the centurion slave. Do you remember that story? The centurion came to Jesus and said, "My beloved slave is at the point of death, so sick for so long that he's about to perish. Will you help?" And Jesus did. Jesus said a little prayer. He didn't even go see the person. And the slave was instantly cured, got up, and started walking around again. That sort of defies belief, but what confuses me more is why Jesus would do it. Because a centurion was the commander of 100 Roman soldiers that spent their lives and their careers oppressing the people in Israel, abusing them, exploiting them, threatening them. And Jesus knew very well that if he helped this person, the likelihood that all of those soldiers would continue to hurt his people would continue. It was very likely that he would do this. And yet, God called him to help them anyway. What defies belief more, an instant cure or truly loving your enemy? At what point did we say and decide that God had to operate within our comfort zones of logic and reason? God continually blasts out of these, defying expectation, challenging our senses of reality. But in the case of Jesus, things are a little different. Because, see, these other guys, they were raised from the dead, but they went on to live out the rest of their natural lives. Jesus, it says, rose again and appeared to people all over the country, sometimes in two separate cities, to two separate disciples simultaneously. This is not the same as the centurion's slave, who could really only be one place at a time. Have you heard about the Uber driver who went all nuts and started shooting people? Did you hear about this guy? Oh, yeah, it hit the news. Everybody was wondering what kind of background screenings Ubers did for their drivers. But the reality is, this guy just decided to start open firing on people. And one of the people he hit was a 14-year-old girl named Abigail. And she was sent to the emergency room, and I'm sorry to say she was pronounced dead on the scene. And they filled out the certificate, and they filled out, they started talking to the parents about the organ donation and all of these things, and the mother just wanted a little bit of time with the body. And so she went, and as mother would do, put her head on her daughter's chest to say goodbye, and heard what she felt were faint signs of life. And the nurse tried to convince her that she was just imagining it. This was very normal during the grieving process, but the mother persevered and said, "No, I think I hear something." So the nurse humored her by hooking her up to some life support equipment. And the mother, over the next few days, held her hand. And after a while, she felt squeezing, and she would say, "Squeeze my hand if you can hear me." And she felt squeezing, which nobody expected. And the nurse said, no, those are just the little spasms that happen when people are on their way out. But the mother persisted. And they kept her hooked up. And they waited. And they waited. And it wasn't until the little girl started tracing with her finger, eyes still closed, completely hooked up to machines, tracing letters on her mother's hand. She traced the letter B. It wasn't until she saw her tracing on her hand, much like Doubting Thomas traced on Jesus' hand when he said, "Prove it to me." The girl was tracing B, the first name, the first letter of the word Barbara, the woman who had been with her at the time of the shooting, and she wanted to know if she was okay. It wasn't until then that the nurse said, "Wait a second, maybe this isn't really over." And since then, she has continued to get better and better and better. 17 days later, she was released from the ICU and sent to the general hospital. And since then, she's been sent to a rehab facility to continue healing and getting better and getting all of her faculties back. The nurses talk about how she has a great sense of humor, and all of that has come back. So when we look at what happened with Jesus, people say he was the perfect sacrifice for the world's sins. And to some degree, he was. To a very large degree, he was. Because at that time in that society, for everything that happened to him, it has to be a pretty broken society to allow someone to be an innocent person to be arrested because of his beliefs, put through a kangaroo court, subjected to really brutal interrogation, and then executed without a real trial. Society has to be filled with sin, oppression, poverty, violence, broken justice system to allow something like that to happen. And he died for all of it, and he died because he was trying to change it. And he was perfect for the sacrifice because the powers that be really truly believed that if they could just get rid of him, then all of the murmurs that had been happening where people were getting more education, and people were having more hope, and people were expecting their rights to be respected, and people were starting to treat each other better and expect to be treated better, and poverty was starting to be alleviated because people were sharing the resources more. And the powers that be got very, very nervous. The powers that be got very, very nervous about that, and they thought if we could just get rid of him, everything would be better, everything would go back to normal. And it's quite ironic because when we look at miracles in the Bible, when Jesus was multiplying the loaves and the fishes, the powers that be didn't really care. But when he started overturning tables to disrupt the banking system, they stood up and paid attention. When he was walking on water and controlling the weather, which defies logic and reason, the powers that be didn't really care. But when he sat on the temple steps explaining to people that the law was actually different than what they had been told and started reading it to them and explaining that it was actually on their side and how to advocate for themselves, the powers that be got really, really nervous. And so they did what they thought would work, what had worked in the past. They decided to just get rid of him. If you can just get rid of him and get him to be quiet, then maybe all of this will stop and everything will go back to normal, because we have a very, very fail-safe system here of exploitation and maintaining poverty to continue amassing as much wealth and power as possible. And we really don't want to stop that. And so They got rid of him. And they made sure to spread lots of rumors so that people would see him as a persona non grata. And it worked to a large degree. Because you see before he died that Peter stops acknowledging that he knows him. Remember that? Before the cock crows three times? Peter's like, no, I don't know that dude. No, I think you've got me mistaken for somebody else. I don't hang around with him. You see the women getting ready all of the ointments to prepare the body for burial. You see the soldiers divvying up his clothes before he's even gone. You see everyone starting to get fearful and hiding and worrying about being associated with him, and everyone shuts up. And it worked. Gracie Allen once said, never place a period where God has placed a comma. Never place a period where God has placed a comma. It is unfortunate that the Roman government and the temple priests at that time did not have the benefit of the wit and the wisdom of Gracie Allen. Or perhaps they might have made different choices. Because on that day, Jesus rose again. They had sent a clear message that anyone who stood up for truth, anyone who stood up for love, anyone who stood up for justice, the penalty would be death. That was the only possible eventuality, and anything you try to do different would be completely futile and a waste of time. Jesus came back and God sent a much clearer message. No, death is not the final answer. You must continue to spread the message of loving your neighbor as yourself. You must continue to do all of the things I taught you to do, to love, to heal, to share, to feed, to help, to minister to be compassionate towards. Because everything you do does make a difference. Every act of kindness absolutely 100% makes a difference. Every time you come in contact with another human being and treat them with compassion and with dignity as a child of God, it makes a difference. It was a resounding message. And it spread like wildfire to know that hope was not lost, that death does not get the final word, that the threats and the fear are unfounded. Because God is bigger than that. Because our God defies the laws of logic and reason and blasts outside of everyone's comfort zone. So I have a good news for you. That message continues today. That message, every time we treat one another with dignity and compassion, it makes a difference. Now, those disciples had to work pretty hard. They had to confront their own disbelief. The disciples, it said, the very first ones to hear, when the women told them what they had seen, they assumed it was just idle talk and didn't believe them. They had to confront their own disbelief. And as they worked to change society for the better, they had to confront the things that they had done and left undone that had allowed it to get to this point. It was hard to look at their own privilege. It was hard to look at their own attitudes. But they did it together, walking hand in hand, because they refused to let death have the final word, because Jesus gave them the hope and the certainty that everything they did would make a difference because he was on their side and was helping them. Would you like to hear some good news today? Would you like to hear some good news today? Let me give you some good news today. In this world where we're being told that the world is completely falling apart, crime rates are soaring. How many people have heard that crime rates are soaring? How many people have heard that we are constantly under threat? How many people have heard about the war between the conservative evangelicals and the progressive liberals? How many people have heard that climate change is going to absolutely destroy us and there is no turning back? How many people have told us that the education system is so broken that we're all just going to live with student loan debt for the rest of our lives? How many people have heard these things? Allow me to give you some good news. I had to write it down. There's so many I couldn't remember them all off the top of my head. The Netherlands will once again need to close prisons due to falling crime rates and lack of prisoners. That is good news, my friends. Scientists are seeing rare sightings of a rare sea otter that was on the endangered species list, and they see this as a sign of hope. Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan announced on Tuesday that all Detroit high school graduates will receive 2 years of free tuition at community college. How many people have heard that? That is good news, my friends. The rare Sumatran rhino has been spotted in the wild for the first time in 40 years. An entire airport, Cochin International Airport in India, my next destination of choice, pays nothing for electricity thanks to the fact that they are running entirely on solar power. An entire airport is running on solar power. France has moved towards a full ban on pesticides that are being blamed for bee losses. Italy has changed laws to make all the supermarkets give unsold food to the needy, following in France's footsteps. Four new gray wolf packs have been recorded in Washington after the species was nearly exterminated last century. U.S. students are faring better in math and science than they did two decades ago. Over 15 species have been pulled off of the endangered list. Pope Francis, on Maundy Thursday, washed the feet of Muslim immigrants, saying, "We are brothers." This is good news, my friends. This is good news. U.S. Supreme Court overturned Alabama's court ruling against same-sex adoption. This is good news, my friends. In India, in Bangalore, India, they have just now completed a complete ban on the use of bags, sheets, and covers made of plastic and other polymers. It goes into effect within 10 days. By the 1850s, due to heavy logging, only 30 to 40% of New England was forested, when in fact it had been closer to 100% when people first arrived there. Today, due to conservation efforts and massive tree planting, that number is closer to 80%. 80% of New England is now forested. With the return of the forests, wildlife has had a major comeback, with some species doing better than ever before. And following in Detroit's footsteps, I'm very pleased to say the Kentucky House of Representatives approved free community college. All students who graduate from Kentucky high schools, homeschools, or obtain their GEDs in Kentucky will be able to attend community colleges for free. For free. This is good news, my friend. Now, the question is all of this a miracle because it just happened? Or is this a miracle because people who read the news 30, 40, 50 years ago said, "I refuse to believe that death is the final answer. I refuse to believe that futility is the final word. I refuse to believe that nothing can be done, that all hope is lost." And one by one, they started taking steps anyway. They refused to give up that hope, and they insisted on continuing forth and spreading the message until after a lot of hard work, a lot of soul searching, and a lot of hand-holding, arm in arm with other people, they were able to make these things happen. That, my friends, is the real miracle, because that defies logic and explanation. I read a very interesting article from a man named Russell Moore. He is the president of Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. And he wrote something very interesting, where he said that after all these years of arguing and fighting about how the conservative movement has been co-opted to just try and grab power in politics, and after denying this for so long, he said, quote, "For years, secular progressives have said that evangelical social action in America is not about religious conviction, but all about power," Moore wrote. "They have implied that the goal of the religious right is to cynically use the moral to get to the majority. Not the other way around. This year, a group of high-profile, old-guard evangelicals has proven these critics right." And he is now calling on people to welcome the refugees, not to turn a blind eye, to show Jesus' love by welcoming them, and giving them sanctuary and helping them. He said, if you want to be a true Christian in this movement, that is what we must do. We have no right to say, well, are you really my neighbor? Maybe we should enact some laws to protect ourselves. He absolutely condemns that. And I don't know which is the more of a miracle. The fact that he's willing to admit that progressive atheists might have a point, or the fact that a self-avowed liberal, progressive, feminist, ordained minister in the United Church of Christ is willing to lift him up during her Easter sermon. That, my friends, defies logic and reason, but our God is bigger than our comfort zone, and our God constantly blasts us out of our comfort zones to reach out to others, to heal this world. And I tell you, I've been a little busy the past couple of weeks, but I'm thinking of calling this guy up and seeing if he wants to have a cup of coffee, because I think we might have room now, a little space for sacred conversation and healing. That defies logic and expectation. I refuse to say that death and futility and constant violence and fighting has the final word. There has to be a better way. The only reason I have this hope is because Jesus has shown it to us. Jesus has proven it with his actions and proven it again and again with his message. One of the most underestimated abilities of God is to take something terrible, take chaos, and turn it into something beautiful, much like we take a dead seed head, throw it in the ground, cover it with dirt, step on it, forget about it, and yet it rises again with glorious beauty. Such is it with Easter. When we look at all of the things that were going wrong in society at that time, they are the same things that we are struggling with today. And yet, out of all of that destruction, God finds a way. God took that horrible, unjust death of an innocent and turned it into love spreading all over the earth. Just like we see today, people's hope rising again, people working together to make the world a better place despite all of the odds, despite all of the evidence, despite all of the news that they're being told, bad news, they find good news because they're creating it themselves, because they are convinced that if you do things with great love in all of your works, it truly will make a difference. Death does not get the last word today. Death never gets the last word. God's word is bigger than that. God's word is more loving than that. The mother of Abigail Kopf, who is now working her way through rehab and doing very well, was asked by a reporter whether or not she considers this to be a miracle. Because, of course, it defies logic and reason. And they're looking for a really great quote for a really great story. She asked her this question, and this is the mother's response. She says, I think she has a lot of spitfire in her, and I think she just willed herself back because she was not ready to go yet. She's got many more things that she wants to do. I don't know if I can say it's a miracle. I think she's just one strong-willed child that said, I'm not finished yet. I don't know if I can say it's a miracle. I think she's just one strong-willed child that said, I am not finished yet. And she's going to finish what she started. Never place a period where God has placed a comma. Can I get an amen to that?